Stanford Financial Group and Life to the Nth Media present. An older man is seated in a library. He fidgets nervously as another man brushes his deep red shirt, and he frowns at a woman who touches his forehead with a cloth. He looks forward anxiously.
Are we on?
The screen goes black in association with Dean River Productions Incorporated.
Hello. Gwen. Thank you. Yes, I'll tell him.
In a darkened room, a man looks out a window at the city lights below.
Sir.
A woman walks up behind him.
He's gone.
A distinguished man of color, he glances at her, then stares out the window somberly.
Contact family members, various corporate boards, and business interest.
Yes, sir. Sir, I am so sorry for your loss.
The attractive gray-haired woman hesitates before walking away, and the man peers thoughtfully into the night, remembering a long-ago conversation.
Am I speaking with Theophilus Hamilton of Birmingham?
Sir, yes, sir, this is he.
Name's Howard Stevens. You can call me Red. I needed a lawyer for a few business ideas I have, a few still in the dream stage.
The ultimate gift. Gray storm clouds gather above the statue of an angel in a cemetery. People are huddled under black umbrellas at a gravesite.
Though these guys may weep, the Bible assures us that precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints.
I wonder who the old man negotiated with for the rain. Well, it's a sure bet he's laughing, watching us get soaked. Yeah, well, now it's his turn.
There's not a person here whose life in some way has not been touched by Howard Red Stevens. Red often quoted Malcolm Muggeridge saying that every happening great or small is a parable by which God speaks to us. And the art of life is to get the message. May the message of Red Stevens continue in the hearts of those.
A child moves her pink umbrella, lifting her smiling face to the rain.
What are you doing? You're gonna get all wet.
Bill steps to the casket.
Even though Dad moved his corporate offices from Texas many years ago, for tax reasons, he always said he wanted to be buried under Texas soil.
He pours dirt across the lid of the coffin. He looks up to see a black and yellow 1971 Dodge Charger RT cruising slowly through the cemetery toward the mourners. As it pulls closer and stops, the dirt vibrates across the casket. The little girl watches as a handsome young man wearing sunglasses and smoking a cigarette gets out of the car.
Is that him?
That's him.
Hamilton and his assistant watch the young man and his entourage approach. The little girl smiles as the young man puffs on the cigarette and strides past headstones. A blonde-haired woman with a black umbrella steps warily across the rain-soaked ground and scurries toward him.
Mom?
He exhales cigarette smoke.
You're late.
For what?
She rolls her eyes. Later, a group is gathered in a conference room and is seated around a long table.
Here we go.
Hey, Mike, give me some of that. Give me some of that. Stop.
Sit him down over there.
Hamilton enters, leaning heavily on a cane. Passing his assistant and several staff members, he stands at the table, peering at those assembled.
Good morning. Before we start, I'd like to say how much Red meant to me personally. As you know, we started out as business partners. And we ended up as friends. I am deeply grieved by his passing.
Yes, well, that's very nice. Now, may we proceed?
Hamilton stares somberly at Bill, then takes his seat with his assistant behind him.
Red's will is in his own words. Still, every bit is legal and binding.
Blah, blah, blah.
Hamilton glares at a boy.
And so, my eldest son, Bill, I leave my company, Panhandle Oil and Gas,
currently worth $600 million.
However, Bill, since you had zero interest in my company while I was alive, I don't imagine that will change much after my death. Therefore, the board will maintain control.
Excuse me, but my client would like to explore all of his options.
Your client has no more options.
One of those instructions Mr. Hamilton skipped over is Red's desire that each of you vacate after receiving your portion of the estate. As in, leave the room?
Well, she can't talk to me like that. But do something!
You can go now, Mr. Stevens.
What?
We should really go.
All right, fine, fine.
In the lobby.
I have never been so humiliated. And did you see that old man talk to me that way? And you guys just sat there and said absolutely nothing?
The young man gets off an elevator in the conference room.
That's it. A cow farm.
A 10,000-acre cow farm.
A woman stands.
Well, what's that worth anyway?
She leaves in the lobby.
Ruth, come up. Come here. What exactly do we get?
A place for you to take your mistress.
Hey, come on, Ruth. Let me explain.
I want to see everything. Full disclosure.
Come on, Jack. Let's go.
Good day,
you
Mr. Stevens.
It's a long way from over, Jack.
You said it was a slam dunk.
Jack,
you said
to Sarah, widow of my late son, J. Howard Stevens. I am truly sorry for the events of the past. Please know that Jay's death represents the greatest tragedy I have ever experienced. I leave you control of my Myers Park estate, where you now reside, and a managed trust for expenses as long as you live.
There we go.
Since your choice of male companionship is vast and varied, a deed and title for the house will remain under the control of my trustees.
Good day, Mr. Hamilton.
Good day.
Hamilton's assistant leans toward him.
It's amazing just how far the fruit can fall from the tree.
And still roll a great distance.
Sarah sees her son.
Nice of you to show up. You're in time for nothing. Let's go.
The young man stands as Sarah gets into an elevator. As the conference room empties, he turns to follow her.
Jason?
He stops and looks at Hamilton with a frown.
How do you know my name?
It's my business to know everyone named in your grandfather's will.
Well, let's cut the BS, because I know what he left me. Nothing.
Walk away and you'll never know, will you?
Jason hesitates outside the elevator. As the doors slide closed, Sarah quickly steps forward and they open. Jason glances back at Hamilton, sitting calmly in a leather chair.
Jason?
The doors close. Jason enters the conference room. A man leaves, closing the door behind him, leaving Jason alone with Hamilton and his assistant.
So what's in the box?
Your inheritance.
Hamilton has a sealed envelope.
Have a seat.
Jason sits beside Hamilton at the conference table.
Does the box or the seal appear to have been tampered with in any way?
No.
Hamilton holds up the envelope.
Then therefore witness this day. I'm breaking the seal affixed in my presence by Red himself.
Slumped against the table, Jason shrugs. Hamilton removes a key from the envelope and uses it to open the small chest on the table. Reaching inside, he takes out a single DVD.
Miss Hastings?
Yes, sir.
The image of the man in the deep red shirt appears on a screen, and the room lights dim.
Are we on?
Yes, we are.
Well, then, if you're watching this, I must be dead. That's a strange concept. How was my funeral? Well attended? I hope it rained. Hamilton, Miss Hastings, I hope you're having a better day than I am. If you've just been with my family, I doubt it. Jason, I made a lot of mistakes with our family, but you're the one I think I hurt the most. The only way I can make it up to you is to not give you anything.
I knew it.
Jason stands.
What I mean by that is that I'm not giving you anything just yet, so sit back down there.
He turns toward the screen.
I've been thinking about this for quite a long time. How can I give you something and not have it ruin you like your uncles and aunts? Even some of their kids. So I want to give you a gift, a series of gifts leading up to, well, I won't call it the ultimate gift. Now, you fail in any way, it's over. You get nothing. And everything you do must be to Mr. Hamilton's satisfaction.
Hamilton looks up from his leather chair.
You might want to make friends with him sooner than later.
This is a voice-activated converse. It allows two-way communication between our office and you. And you can also replay Red's messages on it if you need to.
Sir?
Ah, good. There's a flight to Houston tomorrow at 7 a.m.
As in, morning, 7 a.m.
Yes, that's 7 a.m.
For what?
You have until then to accept.
Why do I have to go?
You'll find out when you get there.
Mrs. Wacht.
You might want to rethink that.
He turns from the double doors and strides toward Hamilton and Miss Hastings.
What could he possibly give me that he hasn't already taken away? Huh? Screw him. Screw both of you.
He shoves the door open and storms out. Elsewhere, a photo of a man and a little boy is labeled Father's Day, Boys' Night Out.
How was your day?
A woman joins Jason.
I'm not sure.
What do you mean?
My grandfather may have left me something.
Yeah?
I'm just trying to figure it out.
You mean it's not cash?
I don't know.
Don't know?
Well, if I want to play into his little power trip, I gotta go pick it up.
Where?
Texas.
Ugh.
You know what? I'm not going.
Well, aren't you at least curious? What if it's gold?
They cross an apartment filled with partiers to a balcony and look at the city's nightlights.
He ruined my life.
My best revenge is to just ignore him. Besides, I've got a trust fund. Worst case scenario, I'll live off my mom. I don't need his money.
Yeah, but one can always use some extra walking around money.
Not if I have to sell my soul.
But if you had to, at least try to get as much out of him as you can. I mean, my gosh, what if you actually had to get a job sometime?
He stares at her suddenly. Early the next morning, he screeches up to the airport on a motorcycle. Miss Hastings is waiting inside at the U.S. Airways counter and shakes her head. Jason enters casually and shrugs.
Police escort. Sort of.
He grabs his ticket, leaving her staring toward a policeman at the bike outside. Jason flashes his boarding pass at an attendant and slumps into a first-class seat.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the flight deck, we have a very full flight to Houston this morning. If you wouldn't mind taking your seat.
Excuse me, sir. Can I see your boarding pass again?
He offhandedly gives the flight attendant his boarding pass.
Thank you. Yeah, see, this is, I'm sorry, this is for coach.
That's impossible.
No, it's 32B.
We'll change it.
We can't.
Jason grabs champagne and it's taken from him.
We can't. Thanks a lot. We can't change it. It's a Q fare. You can't upgrade. So can we?
Do you have any idea who I am?
I know exactly who you are. You're the guy in seat 32B. Here you go.
Later in 32B, a man is asleep on Jason's right shoulder, and a woman with a restless baby is crammed next to him on his left.
Converse, Jason Stevens.
Jason is outside the airport.
Hello, Jason.
So what is this? One of those things Aunt Martha had to wear, or what?
I see you're at the Houston airport. Baggage claim.
A broad-shouldered man with a wide grin stops behind Jason and shakes his head.
You got a problem?
You don't look like you worked a day in your life.
Great. The amazing Kreskin. Look, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing because no one's been able... Hey! Hey!
He takes Jason's bag.
I'm Gus. I'm your ride. Get in.
Later in the truck, Gus is driving through the countryside and Jason's asleep in the passenger seat.
Crazy.
Jason wakes.
I'm crazy for feeling.
Sorry about your grandfather's passing. You and I go way back. He was some man. He loved to work. This man just loved hard work.
Right. Mind if I smoke?
It's free country.
Jason leans forward, reaching for something.
Can you stop at the next convenience store?
Convenience store?
Please.
The last store is about 50 miles back. We've been on my property for the last 30 minutes or so.
They get out of the truck.
Now, seeing as how you're Red's grandson, you'll stay in the main house with us. No, it ain't much. The little lady just wanted a modest place. Dinner's in an hour, breakfast at 5.
Gus walks toward a large columned home.
Gus? Aren't you forgetting something?
I don't think so. Shoot.
The gift?
Gus walks away. Alone at the truck, Jason looks around the property.
So this is hell.
That night, Gus and his wife are downstairs. The scene scans to an upstairs bedroom.
Crazy. I'm crazy for feeling so lonely.
Jason is lying on a bed, staring solemnly across the room. In front of him, work clothes are stacked on a chair. He covers his head with a pillow. Later, he opens his cell phone and tries to get a signal. He moves it around his bed.
You'd love me as long.
The next morning, Jason's bedroom door opens. Gus enters.
Hey, city boy. Breakfast is over. Don't you have some kind of gizmo to wake you up?
It's 5:20.
Beat it.
Gus leaves the wood-paneled room. Jason rolls over with his back to the door and covers his head with a pillow. Gus returns with a cattle prod and presses it against the seat of Jason's pajamas.
Morning.
What is your problem?
Shortly, Jason comes downstairs wearing the work clothes. Gus is standing at the bottom of the stairway in a cowboy hat and jacket. The two men look at each other with expressionless stares, and Gus walks toward the door. Jason hurries to a woman clearing the table and grabs some food from a plate.
Let's go!
In the truck.
Your granddad and I started out together at Wildcat and Oil Wells down in Louisiana. Made some money, we each bought cattle spreads as a hedge against the oil run out. Of course, they ain't really made it unless you own your own little piece of Texas, right?
Right.
Later, Jason is leaning against the truck as Gus uses a two-handled post-hole digger to make a hole in the ground. Wearing work gloves, Gus picks up a bulky fence post and drops it into the hole. He tamps it down a few times, then kicks dirt around it, pressing the Texas soil with his foot.
Just from there. 8 feet from the center.
What?
Lunch will be sent around about 11.
Jason stands erect and peers toward a line of trees in the distance.
Well, how far am I supposed to go?
Don't worry, you'll run out of posts before you run out of Texas. I wish I had a dollar for every fence post I've ever set. Matter of fact, I do.
Jason chuckles sarcastically as Gus gets into the truck and drives away, leaving Jason in a cloud of dust. Around 11, Jason is asleep on the pile of posts when two farm workers bring his lunch. They pat his leg to wake him and leave. At the house, Jason is outside trying to get a signal on his cell phone. Gus watches out the window from the dinner table and continues eating. At daybreak, the morning sky is painted with the colors of dawn as Gus drives to the pile of posts and stops. Jason gets out of the truck, and Gus drives away. Standing alone, Jason looks around the expanse of flat land in the dim light of early morning and slowly puts on his work gloves. When Gus returns, Jason looks up from a string of lopsided posts strung with sagging wire.
Hey!
Gus loops a rope around a fence post.
What do you think?
He tightens the rope and returns to the truck without looking at Jason. As he drives away, the fence posts pop out of the ground and trail behind him.
Oh! Hey! Oh. Come on, man!
Later, Jason's standing on a tractor.
So I'm dying to know, what did you get?
It's complicated, but it involves land, building materials, and slave labor.
They're giving you a shopping mall?
Gus watches from the house.
Not exactly.
So it must be the land, right? They're giving that to you?
Land's got a lot to do with it, yeah.
You don't sound too sure.
Well, whatever it is, I gotta survive this geriatric cowboy until he gives it to me, or when I get back, or when I'm finished.
Finish what?
You know what? Let me get back to you, okay?
Jason, what are you...
He closes his cell phone and jumps to the ground.
So that's it.
The next morning, Gus flips on a light and comes downstairs wearing boots, jeans, and a plaid shirt. He stops in the dining room doorway when he sees Jason already dressed and eating breakfast. Gus sits at the head of the table. Jason stares over at him and continues eating his toast. At the worksite, Jason's leaning against a post hole digger, wearing gloves and a cowboy hat, staring resolutely into the distance. He looks down and lifts the tool. He begins working. He sets a post. He continues the next day.
Yes, indeed, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
He measures posts and works until dark.
Yes, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Gus watches and smiles.
Yeah. Well, it may be the devil, and it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Jason, tanned and streaked with sweat, sets one fence post after another, working until after dark. Later, under a blazing Texas sun, Gus drives up to the work site, and three ranch hands get out of the truck. Gus walks up to Jason, who continues working on the stretch of fence.
Let's go.
Jason glances up.
I'm not done.
Work's never done on a ranch.
Gus turns and walks back to the truck. Jason stops working and looks down the length of straight fence posts, evenly placed, that reach toward the horizon. He stabs a work tool into the dirt as the ranch hands move in to take his place. Picking up his jacket, Jason strides away. Jason and Gus are driving across the ranch in the truck. They turn to look at each other for an expressionless moment, then face forward. Gus reaches toward the dashboard.
Crazy for feeling so blue.
Jason slowly turns toward Gus and shakes his head. Later, Gus stops at the airport. Jason looks at the rancher.
You know, you do any work like you just did, you can do anything.
Jason nods, gets out of the truck, and walks away. He returns and leans against the truck door, looking at Gus through an open window.
Now, aren't you forgetting something?
I don't think so. Shoot.
The gift. I came here to pick up a gift, remember?
Jason lifts his hands in a frustrated shrug. In the conference room, Jason's glaring at Hamilton.
That was the gift? I do manual labor for a month, and you're trying to tell me it was a favor? To me.
The gift of work.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Look, Hamilton, just tell me what my total inheritance is. I'm over this.
Passing Miss Hastings, Hamilton leaves.
Where are you going? Where is he going? Can you tell him to come back, please? Mr. Hamilton? Mr. Hamilton! Hey!
Jason hurries after him.
Mr. Hamilton, sir, please.
He gently grasps Hamilton's arm.
I think it's only fair that I know the amount of money that we're dealing with here, don't you? I mean, I've been gone for a month. Just tell me, what do I have to do? What is it?
Red said a series of gifts. But let me add a personal note. I, too, think this is a waste of time. But it will end shortly. Because you are going to fail. I expect you to fail and to fail miserably. Now, if you do want to continue, make an appointment with Miss Hastings.
Hamilton turns to leave.
Okay, look, whoa, Mr. Hamilton.
Jason stops Hamilton again, and the men face each other in the hallway.
I've been acting like a moron about this whole thing, and I'm sorry. And now I see exactly what you and Red have in store for me, and I think it's exceedingly beneficial. So what's the next gift?
You'll know.
Later, a barred security gate opens, and Jason pulls his vintage black and yellow muscle car into a parking garage. He parks in a space and gets out. He passes two men at a tow truck.
Howdy.
He ignores them. Twirling his keys on his finger, he enters his apartment. He removes his dark glasses and stares across the now empty penthouse. He runs to the garage as the tow truck pulls away with his car attached.
Wait! Wait! The $3,000 paint job!
Red is on tape.
Well, you don't begin to live until you've lost everything. Heck, I've lost everything 3 or 4 times. It's the perfect place to start. Now, for most of your adult life, you have been the life of the party and an easy touch for a lot of weak hangers-on. Now, let's see who your real friends are.
Jason leans forward and glares at Red's image.
I was at your funeral, and there wasn't a single person there who wasn't on your payroll or didn't have something to gain from your death. What exactly is he asking me to do?
I want you to come back at the end of the month with one true friend.
With his hands on his hips, Jason stares at Red's image, shakes his head, and walks past Hamilton and Miss Hastings without looking at them. Later, Jason's at a restaurant with his girlfriend.
Thank you.
And how are the lobster tails?
It's fine, thanks.
The lady was enjoying the Montrachet.
She takes a sip of wine.
And sir, Margot, I hope it met your expectations.
It was terrific, thank you.
We don't get too many requests for the 78. It's a bit too pricey for some of our patrons.
The waiter hesitates, then lays the check on Jason's table.
I'll just leave this with you then.
He leaves.
Kaylin, where do you see our relationship?
Jason reaches for a credit card.
What are you asking me, Jason Stevens?
Just thinking. How long have we been going out?
An appropriate amount of time. Long enough.
See, my thoughts exactly. I was thinking that maybe it's time to take us more seriously.
Yes?
But there's something I want to ask you first.
Jason, if you're talking about a prenup, isn't that sort of passé?
Well, see, I was thinking...
Excuse me, sir. The charge card company declined the charge.
That's impossible. I don't have a credit limit. Just run it through again.
It's always our practice to run it through again, but they declined.
Jason looks up at the waiter and Caitlin smiles.
Okay.
He gets another card.
So I was thinking,
He lays it on the table.
Well, maybe it'd be a good time for me to move in with you.
You move in with me? Why? Have my wardrobes at your penthouse.
It's just for a change of scenery. Besides, I'm remodeling my place.
A remodel? Who's your designer? I know everyone in town.
I should have said I'm beginning to remodel. I've only really started with the demolition.
The waiter returns with the manager.
I'm sorry, sir. Your bank is on the line. They'd really like to speak with you, I must insist.
Look, guys, I'm having a little bit of a setback. It's nothing that can't be fixed. All right?
They wait a few steps behind Jason. He looks at Caitlin.
Sweetie, I'm switching accounts right now, and I'm temporarily out of money. Is there a way you could pay for this?
Caitlin's face turns somber, and she fixes her sad eyes on Jason.
Jason, you're...
She looks away from him.
Asking me to pay the bill?
Jason's leaning forward expectantly. Caitlin leaves, and Jason slumps back in his chair, glancing quickly at the waiter and manager behind him. Outside on his cell...
You owe me! What?
Yo, dude, I'm rolling over.
What do you mean I can't?
I have been there for you countless times. You owe me. That's it. Bottom line. Who was the one who loaned you 10 grand last year?
You know I can come up with a better excuse when I was 12 years old?
All I need is a place to sleep. I don't get what the problem is, dude. You can let me spend the night. One night. Hello?
Sorry. Your service is disconnected.
He throws the phone.
Can I help you?
No.
Yeah, shut up.
That night, Jason approaches the front door of an estate. His mother, Sarah, opens the door.
Jason, what a surprise.
Mom, you're never going to believe this.
I'm afraid I can't let you in.
She blocks the door.
I'm having a bit of a situation. I need some help. I need to borrow some money.
Of course you do. Everyone needs money.
She pushes him out.
Didn't your grandfather leave you anything?
What are you talking about? He hated me.
Jason, he did not. He didn't come around much, but I always thought it was because of me.
It doesn't matter. Do you have any extra spending cash?
I would love to help you, but I can't.
You can't?
They told me specifically that you would be coming around for money and that I was not to give you anything.
But I'm your son, Mom. That's what you're supposed to do.
If I violate their instructions, I am out everything. Everything. So, for the sake of the greater good, I must insist that you leave. I'm not going to upset the whole apple cart just because you're facing a few challenges. I'm sorry. I just cannot help you.
Thanks.
He leaves and Sarah closes the door. He waits out front for a moment, then walks away. The next morning, he's sleeping in a chaise lounge at the side of a swimming pool. A maid approaches and pokes him with a toilet brush. She beats him with a brush and chases him away. Jason's walking near a park bench, kicking an empty can. Later, a bum is pacing in front of the bench where Jason is now sitting. The bum fidgets with a cloth and glances nervously at Jason, who is sitting with his head down and his arms folded across his chest.
Hey, man, you're on my bench.
Jason looks up.
On my bench.
There are empty benches on both sides of him.
Beat it. A simple no would have sufficed.
Fine. No.
No what?
No, you cannot sit on this bench. This is not your bench. This is a city bench. Go sit on another bench.
But it's my bench, you know. I've got just as much right to it as anybody. It's a free country, you know.
See, that's where you're wrong. Name one thing in this country that's for free. You need money for everything. Without money, you're nothing. Look at you. No money, no food, no family, no friends, nothing. Besides, I'm sitting on this bench now. This is my bench, okay?
Jason leans across it.
I'll flip you for it.
Fine.
He stands. Jason and the bum both search their pockets for a coin. Finding nothing, both men shrug.
I have a quarter.
The little girl with a pink umbrella is holding up a quarter. Jason takes it.
Thanks.
He flips the coin high into the air. The bum catches it, looks from Jason to the little girl, and runs. Jason lies down on the bench.
Well, aren't you gonna chase him for it?
Beat it, kid.
I've been watching you. You're not a real bum. We saw you at a funeral. Quite the entrance.
What were you doing?
My mother and I come here for lunch every day. Except right now, she doesn't know where I am.
Emily!
Whatever.
Emily! Oh, Emily!
You must really be having a bad life.
Come on, right now.
I was just having a pleasant conversation with this gentleman. Leave us alone, please.
Dear, don't be ridiculous. Sorry to disturb you. Come on.
That's okay. I'm not the one who's disturbed.
Some friend you are. Thanks a lot. Poser.
You know what I've said about talking to strangers.
It's not a real bum.
Hey. Whoa, wait.
He gets up.
Okay, this is gonna sound really, really strange, but I'm just gonna come out and say it. I'll make a deal with you. I need a friend, but only for a little while, and, in return, I don't know, I'll take you both to Disney World.
Excuse me?
I need a friend.
Explain yourself.
It's complicated.
No, it's not. It's pathetic.
Come on. No, just
because I told you. He's not a real bum.
Okay.
Jason turns around to find the bum sitting on the bench, smiling.
Oh, dude, come on.
Thrill is gone. Later, Jason's running from a Rottweiler and jumps a fence. At night, Caitlin's drinking wine with a man. Jason watches through a window from behind a fence.
The thrill is gone, baby.
Security pulls him away.
You know, she doesn't even like shot enough to pop. You know you
done me wrong, babe. Morning finds Jason on the bench in Hamilton's office.
Thank you. Miss Hastings, bring me the Stevens file. Looks like our boy's not even going to make it through round two.
But, sir, doesn't he have until the end of today?
Well, from what I hear, he could have another month and still get the same result.
Yes, sir.
At the park.
So what do you think? Is this a good spot?
Yes. Perfect.
You can see everything under the perfect tree. Hey, hey!
Get that back!
Sir, you need to step back. No, sir. I'm sorry, you need to step back. Hey, get back. I've got 911 all dialed in. All I have to do is press send. Sweetheart, come on, get back. Ow!
Hey!
No.
Hey! Leave him alone!
Jason looks from the bum who is bothering Emily and her mom back to the bench. The bum drops the food from the picnic and races Jason toward the seat. Jason beats him to the bench.
My bench.
Jason lies down with a smile and crosses his arms over his chest. Emily's mom kisses her.
Mwah. So, you have a bet with the dead guy?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Emily, be polite. Wait, how can you have a bet with a deceased person?
See, that's the part that's complicated.
So, you come up with a friend. What do you get if we go along with this?
Emily.
No, it's okay. I don't know. Something about an ultimate gift, or something.
But you're not sure what that is.
Yeah, that about sums it up.
So what do we get if we agree to do this? We need money. How much are you willing to pay?
Emily! I'm sorry, you're gonna have to excuse my daughter. Sometimes she tends to be a little outspoken.
Emily looks up, her reddish-brown hair resting against her shoulders from under a knit cap.
I can't promise you anything.
Now that's better. But what if we really did?
Emily puts a straw in a soda and gives it to Jason.
Become friends.
In the conference room, Hamilton is staring solemnly at Emily. She stares back as she slurps a soda through a straw.
Emily, it's not polite to...
Hamilton stops Emily's mom and peers down the long expanse of table to Emily, seated alone at the far end. She looks at Hamilton.
So you're Jason's friend?
Yes, I am.
True friend?
Absolutely. Pinky promise.
She holds up her pinky.
So how long have you known Mr. Stevens?
We go way back. We're like this.
She crosses her fingers.
Now, where do I sign?
And, he hasn't promised you any compensation for this friendship?
Look at him. Does he look like he has anything to offer?
Miss Hastings stifles a laugh.
So, you expect this friendship to continue?
I plan on knowing Jason for the rest of my life.
Emily's mom glances away from her daughter and Hamilton nods. On the street with her mom, Emily opens her pink umbrella and looks at Jason.
Tomorrow, lunch at noon, our usual spot in the park.
Sure.
He walks away, leaving Emily and her mom standing alone.
Just a minute, pal. You owe me.
He glances back and keeps walking. With her fingers, Emily forms the letters W-E-L on her forehead and stomps away.
Emily, wait!
Later, Jason and Miss Hastings are looking at a photo.
They go back a long way, don't they? Mm.
There was a time when Mr. Hamilton was quite ill and needed a kidney transplant. Your grandfather went out of his way to help him find a donor. You could even say, I think that Mr. Hamilton's alive today because of Red Stevens.
He turns from the photo of Red and Hamilton to Miss Hastings. She glances around the office.
In the basement of this building, there's a small apartment for a custodian. It isn't being used right now. Perhaps you'd like to take a look at it?
He stares at her smiling face for a moment and nods.
Thank you.
Later.
Jason, you have no concept whatsoever of the value of money. Money has always been available to you like the air you breathe. I tell you, let's review some highlights of your recent past.
On the screen, Red opens a notebook.
A $25,000 per night suite in Paris with a personal chef, whom you tipped heavily. Toured the Bordeaux region in chauffeured hot air balloons.
That was amazing.
A week of heliskiing in San Moritz. A small fleet of exotic cars, the latest in everything, including women. But the past is the past. And I figure you've probably had a pretty tough month.
Hamilton slides a window envelope across the table. Inside, a check is payable to Jason.
Well, it's about time. Thank you very much. And if I ever see you two again, it'll be too soon.
Jason leaves with the check. Hamilton and Miss Hastings remain in their chairs. As the elevator doors close, Jason tears into the envelope. Hamilton and Miss Hastings are still in place as Jason returns to the conference room and Hamilton makes a circular motion in the air with his hand.
Well, seeing how you've never held one of those before, let me explain what it is. That's a paycheck. It's for what you earned at Gus's ranch. Of course, the IRS ravaged it first. I hate those guys. In your pocket every step of the way. You start out in business and then you have to make a payroll. And just when you think you're going to make
Mr. Stevens, this is the gift of money, please.
Sorry. Look at me. I'm carrying on about death and taxes even after I'm dead. Look, you have to take that money and as much as you need it yourself, spend it on someone experiencing a real problem. What can they teach you? Put yourself in their shoes.
Jason, would you like us to cash it for you?
Please.
Jason slides the check to Hamilton.
I think we know you well enough that we won't need any ID.
How will you know how I spent it?
Hamilton and Miss Hastings exchange smiling glances.
We'll know.
At the fountain in the park, the bum is rummaging through something. Jason watches with a smile and pulls some money from his pocket.
Hey.
He walks toward the bum.
I didn't take anything. Nothing.
The bum drops a purse and a few items and hurries away. Jason picks up the scattered belongings and puts them into the purse. He opens a billfold and sees Emily's mom's driver's license.
Oh, no.
He finds a photo of Emily and her mom.
Oh, great.
He sits on the ledge surrounding the fountain and starts looking through the purse. He finds a past due electrical bill and a statement from a hospital. Glancing around casually, he opens an envelope and reads, "The total due as of today is $1,600. He takes a deep breath. At St. Catherine's Hospital, elevator doors open to a sign that reads, "The Red Stevens Wing." Jason stares at it from inside the elevator.
Naturally.
A young blonde woman and her little girl. Thanks.
Carrying the purse, he walks down a corridor, passing under a sign that reads, "Children's Oncology." A pink and purple flowered sign on a hospital door reads, "Emily's Room." Beneath it, a skull and crossbones states, "Keep Out." Looking into the room from the doorway, he sees a wig on a table stand. Emily, totally bald, is reading in bed. Jason puts the purse on the sink by the door and leaves just before Emily looks up. In the hall, he pinches the bridge of his nose, rounds a corner, and finds Emily's mom walking toward him.
What are you doing here?
She puts a hand on her hip.
You saw her?
Yeah.
Did you talk to her?
Jason licks his lips nervously and looks away.
So what's wrong with her?
It depends.
On what?
On who you really are.
Maybe I can help you.
Emily has leukemia. We thought she was in remission after a bone marrow transplant, but a couple of weeks ago, her body started to reject the transplant.
I'm sorry.
She nods and walks away, and he lowers his head.
Hey.
He hurries after her.
Well, you got any money, right?
Oh, so that's it. You won your bet with your rich grandfather and you're back off the streets. Congratulations. What is it now?
I do have to give away some money.
You're getting less mysterious by the minute. I bet you're gonna get to the end of your game, collect your cash, and just ride off into the sunset.
I don't know. Maybe. But Alexia, if I can help you, why won't you just let me?
Because no rich kid is going to use me or my daughter to play a game.
He glares at Alexia and walks away, shaking his head. He passes people in a waiting area, including a man reading a newspaper. He returns and slaps the paper from the man he recognizes as Hamilton's investigator.
She owes $1,600 in back rent. Pay it.
He gives the man the money.
You're $100 short. Your check was for $1,500.
Tell Hamilton I'm good for it. Just pay that bill.
In the conference room, Jason empties a paper bag of money onto the table.
Your other $100.
Hamilton nods with a smile.
We push play.
Our lives should be lived not avoiding problems, but welcoming them as challenges that will strengthen us so that we can be victorious in the future. So now that I've given you the gift of work and friends and the value of money, let's discover the gift of family. Now, this is a tough one, but see if it's even remotely possible to get something positive out of our family. See if they truly know how to count their blessings. If my doctors are remotely accurate, this assignment might even fall on Thanksgiving. How appropriate.
He's joking, right?
Hamilton and Miss Hastings smile up at Jason. At the hospital, Jason's striding down the corridor toward Emily's room. Inside, he finds a woman making an empty bed.
Hey, where's the girl?
Who, Emily? She's with God.
Emily, seated in the chapel, facing a statue of Jesus. His arms are open wide and rays of light filter across the room toward her. Jason approaches.
Oh, there's my best friend.
He sits in the pew behind her.
Listen, about the other day.
So, now you know all about me. No more mysteries.
Look, I'm really sorry.
Shut up. Don't be pathetic.
She stares at the statue.
I wonder if he takes advance orders.
For what?
For my place. You know, there.
What do you think it's going to be like?
Butterflies. Lots of butterflies. Do you know God? Paints every color on a butterfly with his fingers.
I didn't know you thought about stuff like that.
I think about dying. There's something basically unfair about a person dying. I even hate the idea.
You know, I don't know much about God or Jesus. But I can promise you that those arms are meant for you.
What's gonna happen to my mom? I really don't hate her, you know?
Jason sits beside her, pulling her gently into his hug. She rests her head on his shoulder, her long wig showing from under her knit cap.
Did I mention?
He wipes a tear from her cheek.
I wouldn't be upset if you kissed her.
He leans back, staring into the child's eyes, and lifts his eyebrows.
Do you think your mom and I...
Okay. It's official. You are the slowest person I have ever met. You two were made for each other. I knew that back in the park.
In the park, I look like a bum.
Let's not be delusional. You were a bum. So... what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
Alexia is at the nurse's station looking through a file as a doctor approaches her.
Mrs. Drummond?
Yes.
She faces him.
I want to send Emily's charts and blood work off to a specialist, see whether or not she's a candidate for another transplant.
Oh, will that give her a better chance than chemo?
Unfortunately, chemotherapy isn't going to be enough. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
He touches her arm and leaves. Jason watches Alexia from the other side of the nurse's station as she puts her hand to her mouth. She leans against the counter, her body racked with deep sobs. Jason moves around the counter toward her and stops at her side. She slowly turns to face him and reaches out to grasp his sweater in her fist. He hesitantly touches her wrist for a moment, and she buries her face against his chest, resting her hand on his shoulder. Later, they're at a table in the cafeteria.
So when I found out I was pregnant, he was getting ready to leave for college and didn't want anything to get in his way. And Emily, she's the best decision I ever made.
She squeezes her nose with her fingers and crosses her arms on the tabletop.
So, apparently, someone came by and covered my back rent. Was it you?
He sips his coffee and shrugs.
Thank you.
So I have a question for you, and I hope I'm not being too out of line here. But I was wondering if you'd like to join me for Thanksgiving.
Oh, thanks. That's nice of you to ask, but I can't. Obviously, Emily needs me here, so... But thanks.
Well, it's too bad, because you're missing out on a splendid example of a way too wealthy, American, dysfunctional thing. It's... Yeah.
Oh, you know, I have the strangest feeling I might have enjoyed it.
Later, Emily is in her hospital bed reading a book titled Emily the Strange. She looks over at Alexia.
What are you thinking about?
Nothing.
You're thinking about Jason.
Emily puts her book aside with a smile. Alexia puts down her own book and joins Emily in bed. Putting her arm around her daughter, she lays down next to her.
Yeah, he's weird, isn't he?
He's a good weird.
You know, he invited me over to Thanksgiving with his family.
Oh, really?
Yeah, of course I told him, whatever, loser.
Alexia fingers W-E-L on her forehead.
I think you should go.
Absolutely not. I wouldn't dream of missing Thanksgiving with you.
Emily has a mischievous smile. Later, Alexia and Jason are leaving the hospital.
So why'd you decide to come?
My daughter banished me.
Oh. So I have you by decree.
Knowing Emily, by design.
Mission accomplished.
Two completely opposite people who wouldn't have had a chance without me. Destined to make each other miserable.
Emily and the aide watch from a window as Alexia gets on a city bus. When Jason doesn't get on, Alexia returns to him.
You okay, Jason?
Oh, don't tell me you've never been on a bus before.
Later, Jason is standing in the bus, holding onto a strap for balance, his eyes glancing around nervously. Alexia leans out of her seat and stares at him. Then she shakes her head with a smile. Later, they walk up a circular driveway where autumn leaves carpet their way.
Wow.
Brace yourself.
Jason, seriously. I'm willing to bet that they are perfectly normal people.
Oh, yeah? How much?
Inside the expansive mansion, three waiters walk stiffly down a long corridor, carrying silver trays of food. They enter an elaborate dining room where Jason's family is seated around a lengthy table. Children are sitting at a smaller table to the side. Maids are attending the group as turkey is carved by staff and wine is poured. Jason smiles at Alexia across the table.
This is nice.
A waiter places Alexia's plate in front of her.
Thank you.
Bill turns to Jack.
You know, I had my firm do an informal audit. Just the financials of the publicly held side. And there's still several hundred million floating around.
And you know him better than I. Most of those companies were privately held.
A boy finds the converse on the floor.
Maybe we should check in some of his favorite charities. They do have to report large contributions.
That's a great idea. You know, Daddy always was a sucker for a begging hand.
Unfortunately, you're right.
And what sort of business does your family come from, Alexia?
Healthcare?
Oh, how wonderful. Well, we have a wing in the hospital downtown. A couple of wings, I think. Or is it a couple of hospitals? I always forget.
My daughter is receiving great care, thanks to your father.
Great sector, healthcare. Little flat in the third quarter, but poised to rock it.
Okay, I'd like to propose a toast.
Yes, to each other. For suffering through a year of great adjustment.
Excuse me, does anyone else seem to notice it smells a little like cowhide in here?
Ruth glares at Jack.
And how are those sin stocks of yours doing, Jack?
And what's wrong with a little investment in alcohol, tobacco, and firearms?
Over the stench of oil?
And what's wrong with oil? Thank you very much.
My money's just as green in Manhattan as anywhere else.
Bill drums his fingers.
So, who does get the rest of the estate? Sarah?
I don't know anything about that.
Well, you were the last one in there.
No, I wasn't.
Well, that's just ridiculous, darling. When we left, you were the only one there.
Well, Jason was also there.
Ah, Jason. So enlighten us, Jason. You certainly could not have been the one that received the bulk of Red's estate.
Or are you?
Is that why you insisted we get together for Thanksgiving? So you could reveal your newly enhanced trust fund to us?
It's Thanksgiving. I was hoping maybe we could all go around the table and each say something that we're most thankful for.
Are you on crack, Jason?
Again?
Well, here's a thanks. We don't have to put up with Dad's endless litany of cliche quotes this season.
Hand-spun, corn-pone wisdom.
Hear, hear.
A young man lifts his glass.
Who is that? I think he works down at the video store.
Well, Jason will tell you all you need to know about this man, this dearly departed. I mean, he, more than anyone here, has a bone to pick with the late, great Red Stevens.
Jason, I can only imagine what you've just been through.
Jason stiffens.
I could never get them to be thankful for anything.
Oh, my God. Let me see.
Hey.
Come on, let me see.
What in the world is that?
The kids toss the conversation.
Pass it to me. Come on.
Ella,
give it back.
You do succeed.
Hey. No, wait. Here, take it.
One step closer to all I have for you.
Hey.
What's all I have for you?
It's between him and me. It's none of your business.
It has everything to do with us. It's our money.
So he's making you work for your inheritance?
Not anymore, because I don't think I could ever win at this one. Alexia, let's go.
Alexia stands, following Jason out of the room.
Jason, wait!
Sarah runs after him.
Wait!
Don't!
Just tell them what they want to hear!
I don't have to tell them anything.
Jason! You're going to hear from my attorney Monday morning.
Yeah, ditto.
Shut up, Jack.
You're all pathetic.
Jason leaves the house and Alexia hurries after him.
Wait! Jason, slow down.
I put up with that for years. I was a part of that.
She catches up with him near the end of the driveway.
What happened to your dad?
He's dead. What else do you want to know?
How'd he die?
The only person who really knows just took it to his grave.
They make their way down the aisle of a bus.
Jason, there's something I always want you to remember, okay? When I met you, you were a homeless person. I mean, you made friends with my daughter. We shared peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, all this without me knowing anything about your background.
Yeah, well, the problem is, that's me back there.
Yeah, but you can walk away from all that. You already have.
I appreciate what you're saying, but money changes things. It gets you stuff. It's a way to live life, worry-free. Money takes away the worry.
Yeah, I saw what money can do. And your worries, or whatever you want to call them, they're not life or death, Jason.
Okay, I'm sorry, but getting my inheritance is a matter of life or death. And I know when I say that, I sound like I'm being a Stevens, and being a Stevens is all about money, but it's not. It's more.
She stares at Jason for a long moment with somber eyes, then shakes her head and turns away. Later, they're walking along a dark pathway lit by street lamps.
So, I'll pay you back as soon as possible.
He stops and she walks ahead of him.
What?
She stops and turns toward him.
The money I owe you, the $1,600. Happy Thanksgiving.
She turns away and walks toward the hospital, her long blonde hair flowing around her shoulders. Jason watches her leave and lowers his head. Later that night, he approaches a well-manicured Tudor-style home and strides toward the front door. Later inside, Hamilton steps up behind him with snifters of brandy. Jason takes one.
Marietta Ruby.
They look at a wedding photo.
From the time I met her in the seventh grade, that was my sweetheart. She didn't make it easy, though. Took me all the way to the eighth grade to catch up with her.
She's beautiful.
Yeah. She passed away shortly after we were married.
I'm really sorry.
The greatest gift she gave me was the will to move on, to overcome.
You know, I may have met someone myself.
Then cherish her. And become the man she deserves. Have a seat.
They move to some large leather chairs.
Now, as I said, I had a feeling you were going to stop by.
Hamilton presses a remote control, and Red appears on a screen.
That university you attended, what was it rated? Number 3? Number 3 party school in the country. Do you truly know how to learn? Jason, any process worth going through will get tougher before it gets easier. That's what makes learning a gift. Even if pain is your teacher.
Hamilton reaches toward Jason with an envelope. Jason hesitates, then takes it from him. Putting his brandy snifter on a coffee table, he opens the envelope. He unfolds the contents and reads.
No, there's no way. Anywhere but there.
He leaps from the chair.
I know what he's trying to do, and it's not going to work. He can take his millions to his grave. I don't care.
What he's trying to do is for your benefit, not your destruction.
You know, Hamilton, you sound just like him. But guess what? You're not him.
I don't know, son. I do have one of his kidneys.
Later, Jason's outside the hospital. Emily watches from her window.
He's been out there for hours.
Yep, he's got some big decisions to make.
Do you think he'll come in or go home?
Alexia looks at Emily.
He doesn't have a home.
Later.
You're right! He hates you!
Jason faces Emily and her pink umbrella.
I know.
Then why are you here?
I have to leave the country for a while. I'm reluctant to go because of what I'm leaving behind.
What are you leaving behind?
He stares at Emily from the curb and looks away with a sigh.
Then you have to go. Now get out of here.
He walks away.
You screwed up big time, you know. I had to eat a rubber hospital turkey for Thanksgiving.
Wearing her wig and long, dark braids, she stomps off under her pink umbrella. She wheels around and leaves. Elsewhere, shown from an aerial perspective, the scene tops a verdant mountain range to reveal a river meandering through a lush tropical valley. A small plane lands on a runway. In a remote village, children are skipping along dirt paths. People are gathered around an outside fire, and a goat is near a thatched roof hut. An open-topped Jeep splashes through a stream, and its driver stops in the village, with Jason in the seat beside him. The driver walks away. Jason glances around the village and turns to look up at the imposing mountain peak in the distance.
You've been down here, you put your name on everything.
Welcome! Oh, welcome! Jason Stevens.
Oh! A woman hugs his neck.
So good to meet you. I'm Bella.
Hi.
May I be the first to show you inside the library your grandfather built?
She points to a sign reading Stephen's Library.
Yeah, sure.
Good, good.
Inside, there are a few books and a world globe rests on a shelf.
For all the books.
Oh, you joke. With the people. Is it not like that in the great libraries de los Estados Unidos?
She follows Jason as he studies the books on the wooden shelves.
Villagers wait for books. You bring them new books. They are waiting for you to pick up old books. Exchange. Library. See?
He picks up a book and opens it.
So basically, I'm in a third world country and a backwards library with no books. And the books that are here, I can't even read.
Great.
Bella puts her hands to her mouth, then hurries to a desk and slides open a narrow drawer. She peers into the drawer, then looks back at Jason with a smile before taking out a letter. She closes the drawer and returns to Jason.
This I found when I was cleaning his desk, once I heard of Red's passing. Thought maybe you would like to keep.
He takes the letter and Bella grins widely.
When you sent this to him, he proudly showed it to all of us. Then the tragedy. It broke his heart.
That night in his hut, Jason is lying on a cot and reads the letter.
Dear Grandpa, how's Ecuador? I miss you and Dad so much. You know my birthday's coming up. I was thinking instead of giving me gifts this year, could you take me on one of your trips? I promise I won't cause any trouble. I just want to see you and Dad again soon. Write back, please. Love, Jason.
He tucks his hands under his head and looks out an open-air window at the distant mountain peak. In the library, Jason is smearing paste on the inside spine of a book cover with a wide brush. He presses book pages carefully into the spine. Later, he jumps out of the Jeep at a village. In the library, he closes a book. In the village, he hands a man a box. In the library, he glances around, then looks over at a card file at two little girls who hand him books. Later, a man enters the library and stands behind him.
Un momento, por favor.
You look just like your father.
Jason looks up from his work.
I was here the night he died.
Jason turns toward the stranger with sad eyes. Rays of light filter through the roof and shine down around the man.
It happened up on that mountain, didn't it?
The stranger nods.
Take me there?
You cannot go. It's now the province of the drug lords.
You don't understand. I'll pay you. Well, someday.
I understand perfectly. But, senor, I only have one life.
You're just bargaining now, aren't you?
Senor Stevens. You do not want to pay the price it would take. No one who goes there returns.
Yes, hora, yes, hora. Venga! Our guest of honor, Mr. Jason Stevens!
Later, Jason approaches the villagers from the darkness. Walking through filmy drapes of red and yellow fabric, he enters an open-air hut. A young woman places a garland on his head and Bella directs him to a seat near a fire pit. She sits beside him, and another young woman brings him a plate of food.
Gracias. I'm afraid to ask.
Oh, you will love it. It's so rare we catch one.
A white-haired man stands.
The chief is going to talk.
Oh. Estamos aquí para celebrar a quienes mantienen viva la biblioteca conmemorativa del señor Jay Stevens.
He says we are here to celebrate you and those who keep the J. Stevens Library alive.
No, he must be mistaken. My grandfather was very generous. Everything's named after him.
No, it is the J. Stevens Memorial Library.
Mm-hmm. Usted es nuestro invitado de honor.
You did. Get the photo.
Jason is given a cup and stands. He smiles at the crowd and lifts the cup toward the chief.
To my father.
Hello. Hello.
Jason takes a drink and his eyes widen as he looks at Bella. The chief encourages a young woman to pour Jason another drink.
Have some more.
Salud.
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 Jason downs the second drink and later has a third and a fourth. Very relaxed and smiling, he sees the stranger standing solemnly outside the building. With the mountain peak looming over the landscape, Jason later glances around as he walks through the now empty open-air hut. He crosses the sleepy village and settles in behind the wheel of the open-topped Jeep that is on the other side of the dirt road. He puts the Jeep into gear and rolls out of the village, splashing through a stream and into the forest. Bella steps from her hut as Jason passes, and the stranger sits up from under a tarp in the back seat. He puts on his brown hat and leans back.
You cannot hope to find it without me.
How'd you know I'd go?
You're already Stevens, are you not?
I thought you said you couldn't take me.
My purpose in coming to you was a promise I made to Senor Red. That you could learn the truth. He had one desire, and one desire alone. To ask your forgiveness.
Jason rounds a corner in the lush forest and disappears into an overgrown roadway.
He said one day he would come. Only then you could learn the truth. Stop! Stop the Jeep!
The Jeep slides to a stop on a dirt road that cuts through a wide stretch of jungle. Jason and the stranger get out. The stranger rounds the Jeep to stand by Jason and points into an overgrowth of foliage. Jason leads the way into a thicket of trees and vines. He stops suddenly and peers into the distance where the wreckage of a plane is being overtaken by vegetation. The two men move slowly through low-lying brush toward the crash site. The plane is encrusted with dried vines and long-leafed plants. Jason stares at the sight in front of him as he makes his way through the thick tangle of brush that leads to the airplane. He stops a short way from the wreckage, peering for a long moment toward the plane before continuing toward the site. At the cockpit, he moves to the pilot's window and pulls aside the tangle of vines. Leaning his head through the open window, he looks around at the trailing plants that have encompassed the interior. Reaching out, he puts his fingers gently against the yoke and grips it tightly with his hand. He lowers his head and rests it against his arm on the window frame. Turning away, he wipes his eyes with the back of his hand. The stranger looks toward him as Jason stands near the mangled airplane.
He had learned of a village in the next valley that had a plague and needed medical supplies.
The stranger looks away.
But he never understood why Red forbid him to go.
There was no plague. There was no village.
What?
Red wanted to introduce your father to the oil business. But your father was restless, bored.
No.
He snuck away.
No. He ran away and took a plane he had no business taking.
No.
This is what Red wanted to protect you from. Till now, there can be no blame for what happened here. The penalty for your father's impulsiveness, unfortunately, was a life. He's...
With his back to the stranger, Jason closes his eyes. The stranger stands rigidly, looking over his right shoulder where a rifle is pressed into his back. More men with automatic rifles step from the undergrowth. A stern-faced man with rain dripping from his long hair stares at the stranger and glances toward Jason.
Americano?
The stranger says, he hired me to show him the plane wreck. He likes airplanes. The leader responds, up here, my friend, all men are liars. Looking directly into the eyes of the stranger, the leader slowly takes the stranger's hat and places it on his own head. We hold them for ransom. If no one follows in a few weeks, kill them. Later, Jason is pushed into a crude cell and falls onto the dirt floor. On his knees, he peers through a small opening between the wooden slats in the door and sees the banditos carrying a box of books. They dump the books near an open fire. Jason pulls away from the door, retreating into the darkness. He slumps against the wall of the cramped cell. Time passes. He's sitting in the dirt with his arms clasped around his knees. At night, he's lying in the dirt. Daytime arrives and food is pushed under the door. He devours it. Later, Jason, unshaven and dirty, is staring across the cell. He turns toward a noise and sees a small piece of paper being pushed through a hole in his cell from the other side of the wall. It falls to the dirt. Jason picks up the paper and unfolds it. He reads,
Era el mejor y el más estable de los tiempos.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
He peers into the hole.
It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness.
He slumps to the floor. Meanwhile, Miss Hastings is with Alexia.
Can't you find him?
We think that he went searching for the crash site, which is in lawless territory.
I'm sorry, crash site.
Where his father died.
Well, I mean, is he in any danger?
The women stare at each other.
I'm so sorry.
Quanto tiempo ho permesso corta al cielo?
Neither love nor hate thy life, but what thou livest, live well. However long or short, may the heavens permit.
That night, Jason is lying on his back in the dark cell.
Tell me about my father.
In many ways, he was very similar to you. Restless, rebellious, angry. I think Red saw something in him that he didn't see in his other sons. A fire. The same fire he sees in you.
Jason, now with a heavy growth of beard, turns onto his side.
I still don't forgive you.
In the daytime, Jason leaps to his feet and looks cautiously out a crack. A man is dragging the stranger toward the fire and behind a clump of bushes. Jason slouches to the floor and glances around fearfully. Later, his door opens and he shields his eyes from the glaring sunlight. Two banditos drag him out and blindfold him.
Amigo! Amigo, are you here?
Jason and two other men are brought to the fire and forced to their knees.
Rayelo!
The leader paces in front of Jason with his rifle and banditos surround him.
No, no, no! No! No, no! Please! No! I can pay you! I have money! Please!
Cállate!
Oh, God! God! Does anyone understand what I'm saying?
They fire into the air. They remove the blindfolds from Jason and two other frightened men. Jason's holding his hands up to his face. The leader leans toward him.
Feliz Navidad!
The leader shouts Merry Christmas. Banditos hold bottles of liquor to the two other confused prisoners' mouths as Jason bends forward and sobs. Later, as the banditos pass around a bottle, Jason sees the stranger tied to a tree. The leader drinks from a bottle and slams it onto a wooden box, splashing its contents. He looks at Jason and says, back in their cages. Tomorrow they die. The other prisoners look up, startled as Jason glares. Jason is taken back to his cell and shoved onto the floor. The door is closed, but the outside chain dangles free without being locked. Jason peers at it through a small crack, then slumps against the cell wall. Time passes in Jason's cell.
Why didn't Muerte. Death.
He looks around quickly. Staring out the cracks in his cell, he sees Bandidos passed out near the fire. He slowly opens his cell door and glances around cautiously. He sees a guard unconscious against the next cell, his rifle propped up beside him. Jason leaves his cell, slowly closes the door, and takes a few wary steps. He glances around the edge of the crude building, slowly moves toward the undergrowth, and runs. Later, Jason's running at full speed, shoving tree branches aside as he tears through the forest. He leaps into a pool of mossy water and wades through it with long strides. He runs down a slope and falls to his knees. As he gets back up and looks back, a pained expression crosses his face. At the camp, a bandito is lighting a thin cigar. Jason whacks him in the face with a book and runs to the stranger, who is still tied next to the tree unconscious.
Can you walk?
Save yourself.
Not on your life.
Come on.
He pulls the stranger to his feet and half carries him into the forest. Later, he looks back at the stranger and puts an arm around him as they run. Reaching the slope, the stranger falls. Jason helps him up and the two men continue their escape. They race through a stand of trees with Jason in the lead. Night gathers around the imposing mountain peak as Jason and the stranger, his amigo, race across an open field toward the trees in the distance. At an airport, Alexia is standing in a group of people staring toward a gate. She sees Jason and runs toward him.
Hey.
He drops his bag and they hug.
What are you doing here?
I was scared to death.
They hold each other tightly.
Where's Emily?
She's resting. She'll see you tomorrow.
You guys have a good Christmas?
We didn't have one. How could we?
He pulls her toward him.
You know what? We're gonna have a fantastic one next year. I promise.
He kisses the side of her head and she takes a step back, looking up at him.
We won't have it next year.
That night, Jason follows a man between two long rows of storage buildings. Street lamps cast a glow on the stretch of cubicles, and in the distance, the outlines of city buildings punch small pockets of light into the darkness.
They tell you where you need to go. They tell you when you need to leave.
Jason enters a cubicle filled with boxes and household items.
I tell you what you need to know. Tell you who you need to be.
Shining a flashlight, he finds letters in a drawer and removes them.
But everything inside you know there's more than what you've heard. There's so much more than empty conversations filled with empty words. And you're on fire.
The events of that day play in my mind over and over and over again. I'm so sorry. If your father hadn't died while working for me, please give me a chance to explain. Ever since that day, my life has been filled with grief.
He reads and cries in the conference room.
It is apparent that you will never forgive me. I do not blame you for this. It's also something I cannot do for myself. I loved your father so much. A parent should never have a child precede them in death. It is the most painful experience imaginable.
On tape, Hamilton steps behind Red and waves his hand.
That's enough for today, gentlemen.
He moves a finger across his own neck for the taping to stop. Jason wipes his eyes. At the hospital, he steps to Emily's room. Standing in the doorway, he looks in at the little girl lying in bed. She looks up.
Welcome back, stranger.
Hey.
He glances at Alexia as he enters. She continues her knitting and smiles as Jason sits beside Emily on the hospital bed. He leans across her and holds up a doll.
Did Here.
She takes the doll and looks at it somberly. Alexia looks up from her knitting as Emily studies the gift.
Wow. An airport gift shop gift. How thoughtful. Does it come with needles?
Alexia shakes her head and chuckles.
Yeah, you can kiss me even though you're a guy.
He leans forward and presses a kiss to her cheek.
I missed you too.
Whatever. Let's cut to the chase. You really blew it with us this Christmas.
I was unavoidably detained.
Okay, yeah. I want Christmas.
She grabs his coat and pulls him close to her face.
I want to ride a horse.
Oh, I got like a week or two left with this other thing. But, let me make a call and see.
Jason.
She pulls him closer.
Yeah.
They stare into each other's eyes.
Okay.
That works for me.
Excuse me, sir. It's Jason on line two.
Oh, will you all excuse me? I have to take this call.
Hamilton leans toward a speakerphone in his office.
Go ahead, Jason.
Mr. Hamilton, look, one way or another, this is over. Either I was in South America way too long,
or I missed the deadline or whatever. But what I'm about to do is way more important.
And I know you have no reason whatsoever to trust me, but I need to borrow my grandfather's jet.
His eyes widen.
And I need it now. I want to take Alexia and Emily to Gus's ranch for a late Christmas.
Jason, do you know what you're doing? Look, I have no control.
Mr. Hamilton was saying was that he'll be sending along Red's next gift on your converse. You have your bags packed within the hour, and he will have the jet fueled and ready to go.
Thank you. This means so much to me. And Hamilton, I promise I'm going to take back all those nasty thoughts about you being the Grinch.
Hamilton scowls.
Thanks again. Merry Christmas.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun is to ride in one horse open sleigh.
Hey, Gus!
Gus steps onto his porch, lined with poinsettias.
What is this, snow in Texas?
And it trucked in. Ho, ho, ho.
His front yard is a patch of snow.
All right, Hector, hit it!
Christmas lights cover the house.
Merry Christmas.
Gus, this is Emily.
Hi, Emily. Welcome.
Alexia.
Hi.
Alexia, how you doing? And there he is.
They hug.
I'll get your bags.
Gus walks to the car. Jason bends forward with his hands in his pockets as Emily clutches her airport doll, steps onto the snow, and walks toward the Christmas lights. She moves slowly across the yard, staring at the wreath on the door and bushes trimmed with holiday lights in the glistening house.
I see why you chose this place.
I wish I could take the credit. Emily said her wish was to go horseback riding with you.
He has his arms wrapped around Alexia.
What? Emily?
What? What's wrong?
She's terrified of horses. I'm the one who loves horses. Oh, Jason, it's so beautiful. Thank you.
The next day, the sun rests low on the morning horizon, and the sky is aglow with shades of purple, orange, and yellow. Alexia and Jason are riding horses across a rolling Texas landscape. Emily is nestled against Gus on his horse that's wearing reindeer antlers. Riding slowly side by side, the group moves toward a lake in the distance.
Well, this is what I was telling you about. Pretty, huh?
It's beautiful.
Gonna be okay, sweetie?
Jason dismounts and waits for Alexia to step down from her horse. They walk several feet in front of Gus and Emily, peering out at a herd of cattle. Gus and Emily remain on their horse and watch Alexia and Jason.
Alexia, there's something I need to do.
What?
For Emily.
He turns toward Alexia and kisses her, hiding her face beneath the brim of his cowboy hat. Emily and Gus grin.
And now for me.
He kisses her again.
And Gus?
He pulls her into another kiss, and she rests her hand delicately on his shoulder.
About that.
That night, the dark sky is filled with bright stars. Emily is standing on the yard, peering up at them, and Jason is watching from a rocking chair on the porch. He pulls the Converse from his pocket and flips it open.
When I achieved my dreams, it was like going home to a place I'd never been before. You don't know that feeling, do you? The first few gifts I've given you have been practical. Show up, do this, do that. And then the gifts started needing you to provide input. They needed intuition. Still, your average person is too weighted down. Jason, you need to be free. Free to dream. You need to come up with a dream, then act on it. Jason, this is the time for you to dream.
Jason walks across the snow to Emily, who is peering up at the night sky. Her wig is in braids, and she's wearing a jean jacket with two beaded butterflies on the front.
You thinking about butterflies?
No, Jason. I'm looking at the stars.
You know, I set this whole thing up because I thought you wanted to go horseback riding, not your mom.
Get real. Horses are smelly and sweaty.
He's kneeling beside her as she stares upward.
So, sweetie, what's your dream? If you could dream of anything, anything, what would your dream be?
My dream? My dream was a perfect day.
She looks at him.
And I'm just finishing it. My dream was to be with people I love. Who love each other. That love me.
She wraps her small arms around Jason's neck with her cheek against his. He picks her up and carries her toward the house. Later, they're sitting on the couch wearing Santa hats. Jason's head is on Emily's shoulder as they stare into a fireplace. Beside them, gifts are crowded around a lighted Christmas tree.
What about you, Jason? What's your dream?
I don't know. For as long as I can remember, all I wanted to do was have fun. Now I don't have a clue.
It's okay. Guys are clueless. Hey, you have to know this. Even if you don't have a dream of your own, you gave me mine. That counts for something.
He kisses her shoulder.
Of course.
Emily sits up and they both peek around the couch in their Santa hats to look behind them.
Look at her. Isn't she beautiful? I mean, except for her choice in lipstick. You have to admit, even if you got nothing else out of the deal but her, you'd still be a huge winner.
Alexia smiles and Emily spins toward Jason.
Don't blow it. Knowing you, you're likely to do it.
She wags a finger at him, then sits back. He settles in beside her.
Merry Christmas, Jason.
She kisses his cheek. He smiles at her and runs the back of his crooked finger down her nose.
Merry Christmas.
In the conference room, Jason's peering across the table at Hamilton and his staff.
Up until now, I've only existed.
Miss Hastings is behind him.
I've drifted through life day to day thinking that that was enough. And honestly, I don't know if I have my own dream. But I do know I can help others fulfill theirs. I know it.
Hamilton glances around somberly at his staff and looks toward Jason.
Jason, will you excuse us for a few minutes?
Later, Jason's pacing in front of a receptionist's desk where a sign reads Hamilton and Partners. Miss Hastings leads him back into the conference room and he faces Hamilton.
We've deliberated and evaluated whether or not your answer conforms with the expressed desires of Red Stevens and we find that your answer does. Therefore, we're releasing an amount allocated for you at this time.
Hamilton reaches for an envelope.
That is $100 million to do with whatever you please.
He hands it to Jason across the expansive table.
All of us here at the firm want to congratulate you, Jason, for sticking it out, putting up with some very harsh conditions and prevailing. Congratulations, Jason.
Jason turns back to look at Miss Hastings.
So that's it?
Yes, I think so.
No, don't get me wrong. It's not the amount. It's, it's just, I don't know. I was expecting a different feeling or something.
Miss Hastings walks up behind him.
I think that's because now you are a different person.
And I know we won't cash that check for you.
In Jason's penthouse apartment.
Okay, so he is the best architect in town. That's great. Tell him I want a meeting with him first thing Monday morning.
And how much is that?
Jason's on the phone.
I want to tour that property as soon as possible.
Later.
That's amazing. We'll have a meeting at the bank in, let's say, what? A month?
Well, that would depend on how many vehicles you were talking.
I'm sorry, can you hold on?
Certainly.
He switches lines.
Yeah.
Mr. Stevens, a young lady to see you.
Great. Send her out.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Will it be a large number?
Yeah. There are going to be plenty of cars.
Okay, we'll have to look into it, let you know.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
He looks at the check and takes a sip of wine as Caitlin enters the penthouse. She strolls toward him alluringly.
I like the remodel. Where have you been?
In and out of prison.
Good to hear. No visible tattoos. I missed you.
She looks down at the check.
What's this?
He grabs it.
That's a nice round number. Somehow I don't think you'll be having any more credit card problems, will you? No, you still owe me a dinner.
How could I ever forget?
Missed you.
Pressing against Jason, she kisses him.
I think I still remember my way around. Why don't you meet me in a few minutes?
She leaves the room carrying a bag. In another room, she picks up a Christmas photo of Jason, Alexia, and Emily.
How quaint.
Admiring herself, she fluffs her blonde hair, lifts her eyebrows with a smile, and walks away.
Jason? Where'd you go?
Jason sitting alone on the bench, staring across the park at night. Later, a stretch limousine pulls up to a building and stops at curbside. Jason opens the door, carrying a roll of papers and some binders, and gets out. The driver looks toward him as he leaves.
Shall I keep the limo running, Mr. Stevens?
Jason goes inside.
Maybe not.
Hamilton and Miss Hastings join Jason and others.
Mr. Hamilton, Miss Hastings, I'm so happy you came.
Jason, what's going on?
Have a seat, please, I insist.
They enter as Alexia sits. Jason stands by several covered easels and faces a group of people.
Thank you all for joining me today. May I direct your attention to...
He uncovers an architect's drawing of a large building.
It's called Emily's Home. It's for a dozen or more families experiencing extraordinary health challenges. Now, over here will be the homes. They're part of the same complex, yet individual dwellings. Families are going to be able to live together while they face their problems. Now, obviously, there's going to be plenty of parking. Over here is going to be a state-of-the-art employment center catering to parents, single or married, who need to earn some sort of income while their child undergoes treatment. Now, at this state-of-the-art hospital...
He turns back toward a drawing.
Excuse me. It's missing. Oh, yeah. A church. A worship center.
How much is this going to cost?
If you look at the prospectus in front of you, page 5...
The total initial outlay will be $350 million. Your part will be to underwrite the financing and a loan guarantee of $250 million. I'm going to be putting up the first $100 million of my own money.
Mr. Stevens, this is all well and fine. We did business with your grandfather for many years.
I'm sorry for interrupting, but I didn't phrase this as a question. You are going to do this. You made this much off my grandfather in a typical year.
And gentlemen, this project has the full resources of the Hamilton Law Firm backing it. Pro bono, as I'm sure you will be too.
Alexia hurries out.
Wrap up the details for me, will you, Hamilton?
My pleasure.
Thank you all. I appreciate it.
Alexia leaves in a cab.
Hey! Whoa! Come on, come on, come on, come on.
He motions for the limo and later races down the hospital corridor to Emily's room. He stops at the open door, then turns away and puts his hands to his head. He paces toward the doorway, then moves away again. He crosses the corridor and begins to cry with his hands on the wall. He beats his open hand against it and rubs his eyes with both fists. Jason collects himself and returns to the open door. Alexia walks toward him with her hand to her mouth. As she holds the airport doll, Jason hugs Alexia. Later, they're sitting in the chapel, where the statue of Jesus holds his welcoming arms out wide. A priest kneels before the statue, then grips Jason's shoulder as he leaves. Jason and Alexia stare up at the statue. Jason puts his arm around Alexia, and she leans against his shoulder. He presses his face into her hair. At the cemetery, the statue of the angel stands peacefully against a clear blue sky. The sculpture of a little girl is surrounded by green trees, and the angel is obscured by a tree branch that's blowing slightly in a gentle breeze. A weeping cherub has its little hand pressed against its sculpted cheek. The screen fades to black. Later, people are gathered outside, and a cameraman is on the scene. A man is standing at a podium.
Jason, Alexia, as mayor of Charlotte, it is my extreme honor and privilege to preside over the groundbreaking for Emily's home. But it is also a sad day in that the namesake and the inspiration for this incredible project is not here with us today. But her spirit will always be with us all.
Hamilton and Miss Hastings watch as the mayor reaches for a gold shovel.
Jason, Alexia.
He presses it into the dirt with his foot. The crowd moves toward Jason, Alexia, and the mayor. After Jason shakes some people's hands, Hamilton looks at him with a smile. He peers at Jason for a moment and then steps forward and they hug.
I am so proud of the man you've become.
Thanks in great part to you.
Meet me at my office as soon as possible, will you? I have one more matter I need to discuss.
Of course.
Later, Jason, Hamilton, and others are walking toward the conference room.
You know, I understand you went outside the boundaries of our instructions with one of those gifts.
What?
Don't what me, you know what I'm talking about.
Hamilton's investigator is waiting in the conference room. He puts a disc on the table and glares hard at Jason as he leaves.
Miss Hastings, will you dismiss everyone, please?
Oh, yes, sir.
Hamilton and Jason take a seat at the table, and Hamilton picks up the disc. He gives it to Miss Hastings, and they turn to the screen. The lights dim, and they watch a film by Frank Private Investigators that shows Jason walking along a city sidewalk.
Over the course of several days, this investigator personally witnessed and recorded the subject as he committed various misdemeanor infractions for which he was never cited.
On his knees, Jason fishes coins from a fountain.
Nevertheless, illegal activities did occur.
A woman gives him money.
Panhandling, bordering on assault.
He's filmed taking a plant from a city planter and selling it.
Stealing private property. Resale of stolen items.
He's shown taking several newspapers from a vending machine.
Street vending without a permit.
A woman buys a paper.
Jaywalking. It is the opinion of this investigator that the subject is a reprobate and not capable of completing the 12 gifts laid out in Red Stevens' will.
That's enough, Miss Hastings.
My pleasure, Mr. Hamilton.
Jason, if you made it this far, he had one final message.
Hamilton nods, and Jason enters a darkened room. The library where Red taped his messages. A camera faces an empty leather chair next to an end table and lamp. Jason takes a few steps forward.
Jason?
Yeah.
He sees Red in the chair.
You gave away the 100 million? All of it?
Yeah, so what?
Well, if you're standing here now, it means that not only have you succeeded in receiving all of my gifts, but have done so beyond the boundaries that I have set. I guess that means that I have succeeded as well. What I could not accomplish in life, I've done in death. As long as you are still alive, I will be too. I love you, son.
I love you, too.
Goodbye, Jason.
With tears in his eyes, Jason moves slowly to Red's empty chair. Reaching out, he grips the arm and runs his hand gently around the rich leather. Slowly, he sits in Red's place and settles into the seat. In the conference room a few moments later, he slides into a chair at the table. Hamilton reaches for the small chest and opens it. With Miss Hastings watching at his side, he pulls out a document, unfolds it, and reads as Jason stares at the table.
As executor of the estate of Red Stevens, I hereby execute and otherwise assign complete and controlling interest to Jason Stevens.
Jason turns quickly to Hamilton.
The balance of Red's estate, including all holdings, investment portfolio, and offshore interests, totaling in excess of $2 billion. Depending on OPEC prices and foreign currency fluctuations, of course.
Blinking hard, Jason looks away slowly. Hamilton watches as Jason rests his elbows on the table with his fists against his mouth. Jason turns slowly toward Hamilton. Later, Hamilton sits alone, looking at a photo and remembering the long-ago conversation.
I needed a lawyer for a few business ideas I have, a few still in the dream stage.
When would you like to meet?
Meet? Hell, you're hired.
Sir? Are you sure you wouldn't like to meet first?
You're at the top of your law class, were you not?
Yes, sir.
Then you're my lawyer. Now let's get on with it. We got a world to conquer.
Hamilton walks to a window, and Miss Hastings steps up beside him. He looks over at her as she peers out at the city.
Do you think I'm old, Miss Hastings?
She smiles.
Well, I think it's about time I retire from this law firm.
Whatever will you do, Mr. Hamilton?
Go to work with Jason Stevens. Change the world.
Elsewhere, Jason looks up from the park bench to see Alexia walking toward him.
Hi.
She sits beside him.
Hi. Broke wide open, all spilled.
They stare at the evening lights.
Till I had no doubt.
They turn to each other.
Thank you.
A butterfly flits past as they kiss. It circles Alexia and Jason and rises into the air and flies away. The film credits are listed.
So I want to give you a gift, a series of gifts leading up to, well, I'm going to call it the ultimate gift. Now, you fail in any way, it's over. You get nothing.
If you do any work like you just did, you can do anything.
The gift of work.
Now, aren't you forgetting something?
I don't think so. Shoot.
The gift.
The gift of work.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Clips from the movie are shown alongside the credits. The gift of money.
The charge card company declined the charge.
That's impossible. I don't have a credit limit. Just run it through again.
It's always our practice to run it through again, but they declined.
I need a friend.
The gift of friends.
You expect this friendship to continue?
I plan on knowing Jason for the rest of my life.
Do you truly know how to learn?
The gift of learning.
Villagers wait for books. You bring them new books. They are waiting for you to pick up old books. Exchange. Library. See?
Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. The gift of problems.
Well, you don't begin to live until you've lost everything.
Wait! Wait! That's an $8,000 paint job!
Ah! Heck, I've lost everything 3 or 4 times. It's the perfect place to start. Something changed inside me.
Broke wide open, all spilled out. The gift of family.
Emily. No doubt. She's... That something changed. She's the best decision I ever made.
What's gonna happen to my mom? I really don't hate her, you know?
If I had a legacy. The gift of laughter. Something I'd like for me.
Salud.
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 Never did I fear. The gift of dreams.
Jason, you need to be free. Free to dream. You need to come up with a dream, then act on it.
And honestly, I don't know if I have my own dream. But I do know I can help others fulfill theirs.
The gift of giving.
I do have to give away some money.
You're getting less mysterious by the minute.
She owes $1,600 in back rent. Pay it.
You're $100 short.
Tell Hamilton I'm good for it. Just pay that bill.
So, apparently, someone came by and covered my back rent. Was it you?
The gift of gratitude.
Thank you.
The gift of a day.
What would your dream be?
My dream? My dream was a perfect day. What are the gaps you'll be behind? I'm just finishing it. It's right inside
your dreams. It's your legacy. The gift of love.
I love you, son. Goodbye, Jason.
The credits read in part, directed by Michael O'Seibel. Screenplay by Cheryl McKay, based on a novel, The Ultimate Gift, by Jim Stovall. Produced by Rick Eldridge, John Shepard, and Cleve Landsberg. Executive producers, Rick Eldridge, Dave Ross. Co-executive producers, Jim Van Erden, Paul Brooks, Scott Vivian. Music by Mark McKenzie. Cast Howard Red Stevens, James Garner, Mr. Theopolis Hamilton, Bill Cobbs. Miss Hastings, Lee Merriweather, Emily Abigail Breslin, Alexia Ali Hillis, Jason Stevens, Drew Fuller, Gus, Brian Dennehy, limo driver, Jim Stovall. Legacy written by Kelly Morrison, performed by Ed Goggin. Special thanks to the Stanford Financial Group, R. Allen Stanford and James Davis, Danny Bogar, Bill Fusselman and Suzanne Hamm, Louise Penta and family. Narrative script written by Dorothy Thompson. For the Emmy Award-winning Narrative Television Network, this is Susan Crane. Special thanks to the U.S. Department of Education. www.theultimategift.com. Dedicated to the memory of our partner and friend, Scott C. Fithian, 1961 to 2006.